Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 7, 2006, and our session is entitled Spirit Song, the Woven Liturgical Tradition in Images and Song. The presenter is Nadine Sanders, session number SAN 2006-1. Let's listen in.
Good morning. Welcome for coming. Thank you for coming and welcome. I'm Nadine Sanders, and I already know everybody here, so I'm going to introduce you all to each other. Anne, this is Don.
Bob.
How did I say Don? Sorry. Bob. Pop.
Yeah, Pop.
And Bob, this is Lee.
Hi.
And Lee, this is Laura.
We had breakfast.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
I didn't get the first name, so that was good.
Good.
This is a hymn from, I think, the Unitarian Hymnal. It's Rumi. It's from Rumi, I think. And it goes like this. Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of living, ours is no care of and of despair. Come, yet again come. So the only tricky part is when it jumps up around, up and top and bottom and the middle. So let's sing it. Let's sing it until I think you guys can hold it, and then I'm going to go into a round with you. Well, is this a good place? Come, 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 whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, are not part of a liturgical church, but they're usually creative people who have the potential of making artwork, giving commissions and working with wovens, especially hand wovens, that will be used in a church or a synagogue or a worshipful setting. So what we're going to do is start with a little bit why I got into this. I was raised in the Lutheran church, but after coming to Holden, I discovered all kinds of other possibilities, and now I have my hands in many different spiritual pies, you might say. But when I was in college, I met this weaver, Joyce Harter, and she had a liturgical weaving business for 25 years. This is one of her pieces. It's a very large wall hanging, which happens to be my favorite design she's done. And she and I worked together. I did promotion. I was a journalism major in college, and I did promotion for her small business. It was after I went to college and had a job working for the church that I decided I needed to go to art school, because my love and my joy is in making things and making music. And we have written a couple books together, and through her I really got steeped in the liturgical textile tradition, because this was her business. And I categorize them in three ways. Christian tradition, the Jewish tradition and other spiritual traditions. And especially the last one, I'm really wanting to work on getting more cloth that comes from other traditions, Native and Eastern, because I think we have to include that and include the whole scope to encompass ritual cloth. So the Bible actually has a mandate for using cloth in worship. Whoops, Hakamit did that.
I
must have bumped it. He showed me how to do this too. Up there, come on. Because I don't know this verse by heart. Not my forte. Moreover, you shall make the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twisted linen, and blue, and purple, and crimson yarns. You shall make them with cherubim skillfully worked into them. The length of each curtain shall be 28 cubits, and the width of each curtain 4 cubits. All the curtains shall be of the same size. And that's in Exodus. Who knows what a cubit is? Anybody know what a cubit is? You know their biblical measurements?
Kind of, yeah.
How long is a cubit?
Well, basically, there's the royal cubit and the other, but usually it's considered if you extend your arm from the tip of your thumb to your elbow.
Is a cubit.
Oh.
So
roughly speaking, you could say about 18
inches. Okay. So way back in the Old Testament, we have this mandate talking about rules for cloth used in worship spaces. The act of weaving for churches is done very often, although it has not been written about very often in the 20th and the 21st century. So my co-author, Joyce Hutter, along with Lucy Brusick, who is the partner of a Lutheran minister, both of them are partners of Lutheran ministers, they have done this book called Weaving for Worship. Some of the images you're going to see are from this book. It's a resource to people wanting to do liturgical artwork. And here I don't have to preach this because you folks probably already know it. But the colors, the way I first noticed the colors in the church, I think because I grew up on a farm and I was very aware of the different colors associated with the seasons of planting and growth and harvest and in the dormant period. And somewhere sitting in church as a little kid, I started to look at the colors and think about seasons. And that connection has stayed with me all my life because the liturgical year, of course, has connections to the wheel of the year from pagan or Native, whatever you want to call the original origins of the cycle of the seasons. So if you're in a liturgical church, they may or may not use all these colors. Churches are getting less and less formal these days, which I think is fine. You need to meet the needs of your worshipers. But those colors you'll see played out in these pieces. And then the vestments, I think, are also really interesting because many of these shapes and kinds of garments also have very interesting origins. There's stoles, which we'll probably see the most. Many times pastors wear stoles. Albs, chasubles, copes, dalmatics. Copes you'd probably only see if you were at a very fancy Episcopal or Catholic huge big celebration thing. The Pope would wear one. And dalmatics. And the other thing that's interesting is many of these same garments, not by the same name, however, would have been worn by royalty. So there's a nice, interesting crossover between secular and sacred. So the stole was originally to set apart, to designate who the pastor was, like a yoke. And that way the people could tell who was leading. And the stole came from a pallium, which is a rectangular outer garment that was worn during Roman times, and it marked authority. And an alb, which I think I have a couple pictures of, they're all wearing albs if they have a stole on, was a basic tunic worn by those in authority and the educated people. So a lot of this came out of, six centuries into Christianity from Roman culture. And The deacon is wearing a stole that comes across to the side, and the pastor has on a regular long stole. And if you sit in a church, any church you go to, and start to look at what are these people who are leading us wearing, it's pretty interesting because you have people who are very traditional. These are kind of dark. Oh, well. Who are very traditional and wear always the colors of the church here and everything, you know, very red, green, all the right colors. More and more you see lots of people wearing all seasons or festival stoles, because these you can wear anytime during the church year. And in the whole bookstore, they have weavers from Guatemala and other third world countries who they buy these stoles through fair trade organizations. And these are the kinds of stoles which could be worn all kinds of celebrations and times of the year. So I'm sorry some of these are coming out dark, but on this one you can see that oftentimes if people are really going to make something, they're going to make the stole, the altar cloth, the pulpit hanging, and if you're a weaver, then you like to do these so they all match. This is an interesting piece. You can see this this tree of life, because more and more we're getting, at least in the Midwest, churches are celebrating their centennials, or other places throughout the country, maybe churches are a little younger or a little older. So I've seen lots of this centennial celebrations going on in churches. And that, this is often a time when some new ritual cloth is made. And this was a weaver in the Midwest who did this set for her church's 100th year. And I think she made sets for every season of the church year. And this is a kind of a interesting one because it's got a centerfold down the front and then a stole on the side. So just a little extra besides the stole. So I teach a kind of weaving called Theomormon. How many of you here have tried weaving? Maybe hold them. So just one, two. Laura, there you go, three. And what we're doing mostly in Holden are patterns. Patterns like twills and overshots and the same kind of patterns that are used to make the structures of our clothing, like jeans. Most of us have denim here, and we know that's a twill. But what I teach and what I do is a kind of structure. It's more like painting with yarns. So you can do imagery that's not confined to a grid. So this is the weaving of a stole. You can see both sides are being woven at the same time. And there's lots of patterns you can use to weave liturgical hand wovens. But this is a particular technique I like because I don't like to be confined to a grid. I like to be free and use pictorial imagery.
And it's called what?
Theomormon. And Theo was a British weaver who lived until 1990, and she actually came up with this technique. There's not many weaving techniques that are named for someone. So this is rather special. And I have become a focused Theomormon technique teacher. So this is what I travel all over teaching. Okay.
So it's a person. When, at first, when you said it, Theomormon, I thought about the Mormons.
Right. Has, as a matter of fact, her brother was a bishop in the Anglican Church. So her work is still found today in many Anglican churches in England. So this is a stole that Joyce designed. And the beauty of being able to work pictorially, as quilters could also work pictorially, is that you could work with the pastor and try to create using images or abstract symbolism or colors or ideas that they want to have on their stole. And some people are really, some churches and some people are really adamant that what's used in liturgical weaving must be symbolic, recognized as a cross, a dove, you know, very literal. Whereas other people really believe that you should let the viewer interpret and not give them all the information, more like an abstract or a contemporary, like looking at Mark Rothko maybe. Mark Rothko is not going to give you too many clues, obviously exactly what he wants you to think. The other thing is, I'm always looking at this because I also judge weaving shows, and sometimes it's runway where weavers are hand-weaving clothing. And I think it's really important when you're weaving or doing any kind of art, quilting, felting for the church, to remember that most of the time your audience is a minimum of 20 feet away, which is pretty important to remember when you decide. These are a few stoles that I've done, and this would be an example of an all-season stole because it has all the colors of the church year. So it could be worn for any season and festivals and celebrations alike. This was another one I did for a friend who is, I've got a few friends who are ordained clergy, female women, and she had an idea about the story of Elizabeth and Mary and that they were both pregnant. And I have kind of this pregnant spirit here, and you can see the outline of a pregnant woman's profile in the gold there. See that? And some other ideas. So this was one specifically she wanted these ideas in her stole. The other thing about when you're wearing liturgical garments, maybe you, if you're not a pastor, maybe you've helped. In some churches, people who help serve or whatever also wear it. It's really awful when it's uncomfortable. And these supply houses where many churches used to go in the past to get their stoles and things, some of the work was really awful because it felt like you were wearing a stiff collar that you couldn't breathe in it. So I always think about that when I'm making these things because people need to be comfortable wearing them and they need to stay in place. And this was more of an abstract one done for a person who was graduating and getting ordained, and she had some ideas about things growing and dancing and the moving of the spirit, and so this was just all done with movement and color. Oh, and this reminds me to turn the lights on and you can actually view some stoles. So how many of you are in a church where you go at least during one of the seasons and the pyramids and the vestments or something just really bugs you? Anybody notice that?
Some of the old ones. And some of the old ones are gorgeous. And we've just bought one new white one that is gorgeous from, I think, the nuns in Canada.
Uh-huh.
And
it
has a little gold woven in it.
Well, I have to say now, on the internet, there's some great resources. I actually didn't bring my handout that goes with this, but there is some wonderful liturgical work being done now. There's some small, and they're not supply houses, but they're studios, doing beautiful things.
Yeah.
So that's usually what can happen is if you have some really awful things, you can be a gentle nudge and give a little donation or gift and say, I know where we could get something
better,
very special,
new. And
things that really bug me in the church were like the felt banners where everybody puts their hands up.
Well, and it's a very tricky thing because if you're a pastor and you have to work with an art and worship committee, you know, it's really difficult because people have all these different ideas and styles change. And you have somebody who's been in the church 80 years, and that person just did a Hardanger fair linen for the altar. And what are you going to do? You're going to use it. So liturgical art and music are great sources of fine politics in churches.
It's about so many more things than art.
Yes. I suggested this to my mother. My father died about a year ago, and his church was very important to him. And they have quite a lovely new sanctuary, modern, contemporary. And they have some woven hangings, especially for the green season, which is the longest ordinary time because you use it twice. And they're just outdated. I even know the weaver. And I said, my mother has wanted to do something for the church with a gift in memory of my father. And I said, why don't you commission me to weave new green tapestries and pyramids? We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I feel like much better than I was.
These are very early work I did. I call it the cookie cutter method where I place images on. Now I try to kind of overall do a color wash with my yarns. But at least you can touch it and feel it and see
what material are you using?
When I weave, I like to use wool.
I was going to say this feels like
and
wool.
Silk and cotton. And any more, probably, this is a little rougher than I do now. I would use a fine Shetland wool alternating with silk. Because weaving, just like many other things you do with your hand, takes a long time and you want it to last. So I like to use really high quality materials.
Now, is this
inlaid? So
is that done at the time you're weaving?
Yeah.
It is.
So this
Theo Moorman technique looks completely separate.
It does, because see, it's not on the back.
Yeah.
Huh.
So it's an inlay technique because I'm adding this while I'm weaving the canvas. So think of this as a painting. The painting is green, the pictures are different colors, and I weave the canvas at the same time as I paint the picture.
And it makes them stand up.
It does. It gives them a little
lift.
Yep. A little
tap. Some are applied.
Lots of things could be stitched by hand. There's lots of beautiful embroidery, especially in the Anglican tradition. Beautiful embroidery with gold, metallic, precious threads. So embroidery would be very common. Quilted applique would be very common. Ones from supply houses probably would be applique, I'm thinking, things like that. So, all right, let's see what else we have. So I think that's it for stoles. So chasubles usually are worn in only very high liturgical churches. Do any of you, are you in a church where they actually use chasubles?
Yeah, for special occasions.
Special occasions.
I've seen almost looks like gold lame.
Yeah. For Eucharist would be especially when it is used. Probably more in the Episcopal Church or in Catholic Church at this point, but there are some Lutheran churches that use chasubles. What is interesting, it comes from the Roman word casula, which means little hut. I love that, a protective cloak. And I don't know if you've noticed current fashions, but everybody has been wearing capes that they've been knitting. And so when you think about this chasuble cape cloak, you know, they keep coming back. I'm sorry these are so dark. I guess I need to go in and tweak my pictures. But a chasuble, here's a better one you can see. The chasuble would go over the alb, and it's almost, when you spread your arms, I think of it, it's like wings of an angel. Would be the shape of a chasuble. So I have pictures from weavers all over the country because I have been collecting people who do liturgical work, the pictures of their recent work, because there's as many varieties in liturgical weaving as there is in kinds of painters. This is an interesting one because it's all silk, and this is for a Unitarian presider, and it's got the images of the peace cranes, and I rather like that. So another thing is, we were just saying, it's art and music are very political in church communities. When you're either the giver who wants something new, or you're the people who work at the church and you realize what you have either works or doesn't work, and then the wishes of the committee and the congregation. But I always think that whatever you do, you have to do it with quality, because in a church, you want to stress things that have long, useful life. To be a good steward of the artist, of the materials. So if you ever get into the place where you are working on an art and worship committee, never be afraid, I suggest, to stand up for high quality. Because even if someone in your parish isn't an artist or artistic, when you sit in a pew, even the most art illiterate will see something that looks wrong or flawed or crooked. So that's, I think, an important thing, to always think and be on the lookout for good quality. Paraments, hangings that dress the altar and chancel furniture. And I have often thought, well, why do we have these things in our church? They're expensive, they're hard to maintain, people can't agree with them. But when you think back to the early church, where there were fewer people who could read and write, there was an educated class, and a large, I don't say uneducated, but illiterate class. You know, this drew people in. This brought their attention. Maybe the symbols helped them understand some of the message. And I still think it's like that today. Because I don't know about you, but the first thing I do when I go in and sit down, and you guys are all doing great, because I'd be asleep by now. But when people talk to me, I fall asleep. Or I've had so much junk, things talking to me all week that when I get someone else talking to me, like in a worship setting, they say something and then my mind goes off and I start thinking of something else. So I think today it's really even more important to have textiles to help draw attention to the celebration. So what's interesting about this is you have architecture, and I love modern architecture of many churches. I think it's worshipful, it's inviting, it's light, it's open, it's welcoming, and thus it gives you all kinds of hard, difficult problems. Because look at this altar. It's got openings in the bottom, and it's square, and so good designers, no matter if they're weavers or quilters, have to work with a variety of challenging furniture these days. This is a weaver from Decora, Barbara Berg. And this is an old-fashioned type of an altar where she had to cover up the whole front. It's called a super frontal. And this would be a different kind of a weaving, a pattern weave, but done really nicely, very bold. And I'm telling you on some of these, the actual name of the kind of altar frontal, a super frontal. Long and narrow. The other thing you always have to think about in the church is all the competition from other artwork. Stained glass, you know, can be a real challenge to work with. Also, you don't ever want to do fabric, create fabric, that's going to cover up important symbolism that's already there. So this is a great solution. This is one of Joyce's designs, to have a two-part altar hanging. This would be very traditional, fair linens. You would maybe find them in old Swedish Lutheran churches or the old Norwegian Lutheran churches. And this is a modern-day fair linen woven by a Northfield weaver. The laudium altar coverings, they were more like almost a curtain that entirely masked the table. Maybe because the altar was kind of ugly. Just depends on the furniture you're working with. Look at the background. You can kind of see the diamonds here in the back paneling of that church. And this weaver used those shapes in these really nice abstract designs for altar and pulpit hangings. This is one of my favorite designs, and I'll tell you why. Joyce Redstat's a weaver on the East Coast. And using really simple elements, she used rectangles. She used shades of one color gold. And she created this wonderful altar hanging, which I think viewers can interpret many, many different ways. Maybe the light, maybe for obviously some of you might think, ah, the tomb is empty and Christ has gone out into the world. But some people can see that walking into the light, maybe from life in our physical body into life after life. There's lots of different ways to interpret that piece. Then it has some more typical bursts and veils on the top. And the bursts and veil were used to cover and hold the host for communion, and still are in some churches. This is a student of mine, Ruth Ronan. And she has done some wonderful things. She's actually donating. She's doing this all for her church, every season at New Pyramids, and her church in New Mexico. And this is her Tree of Life. And she's using this technique that I teach. And this is her latest, God's Promise. And this came from the design of children. Children designed this and then gave her drawings, and then she put their drawings into these pieces. So Theo Mormon, that's how you spell her name. She was known for liturgical work, although it's interesting because you read her work, her writing, and she wasn't religious. But she was spiritual, and she really tried to emphasize the abstract so that the viewer, the worshiper, could interpret, put their own interpretation in it. This is the entrance to a chapel in Ripon. Do you say Ripon or Ripon? I never know. Ripon in England. And notice these very contemporary gold sculptures that enter the gate to enter the chapel. And then she used those shapes, she echoed those shapes in this altar cloth. And although she died in 1990, I know a number of her pieces are still being used now, and will be probably for a number of years to come. Here's all different altar meetings that my co-author Joyce has done. Here you can see some interesting treatments to this modern furniture. This is four runners, much like you put a table runner on your dining room table at home. For Pentecost, obviously. This would be for the season of Easter, when white was used. And again, just striations of color, not overt symbolism. This is a really interesting altar because imagine a marble top, and then it has a railing on all four sides, much like the railing that's holding your towel up in the bathroom. So there's a railing on all four sides. And so thus you can hang something over it, just like a towel. And that's how these were woven. The sides you see showing up front now is for Advent. And then halfway through, Joyce changed colors and she wove the rest of it to be hung on the front for Lent. You'll see that in a minute. So there we go. So the side now that's hanging towards the inside of the table is the Advent side we just saw. So design is probably the most important thing when you're working with the church, to work with artists who have a good sense of design, or work with a designer who can design for the artists who are making the work. And, I really love this piece, which Joyce did after she retired from her business, but her church needed a new green set. And look at the way she utilizes the front, the back, and then weaves them through, because green is such a long season. You can hang them inside, or the part that's now facing the presider is turned in front, and it's different symbols. And you can see, too, that Joyce often recycles certain symbols in the way she uses them. That wheat we've seen before. And there's the pulpit hanging that goes with the altar. The other thing is, people who do like to use symbols, sometimes, well, like on those stools, I was very literal. I call it the cookie cutter effect. But you can just do a few things, like in this dove, give it some shading. These ribbons, give it another tone, it gives it depth. When you have a way to work with cloth, like with quilting and this type of weaving, you can be very painterly and make things more, give them more depth, just like someone drawing or painting would be doing. Pulpit and lectern, I forgot I had these. So back to this thinking about symbology. This is a piece which uses positive and negative space. And remember when you used to make snowflakes and you would cut out the little shapes and then you'd open it up and you'd have a snowflake? Well, the reason that works is you have positive space where the white paper is and negative space where the holes are. And if you look around at design, positive and negative space design is everywhere. And here it's used because the green in the middle is the canvas that the weavers wove. And the lime green and the forest green have been inlaid. They're the painting the weaver is, images the weaver's painting. But it's such a simple vine image because of this positive and negative space. So I encourage you always, when you're looking around you, if something pleases you, you see something visually that pleases you, maybe it's that you're looking for a new piece of furniture for your house, or maybe you're looking at some cloth or some clothing you're going to buy, or anything else. why do I like that? And it helps you realize what interests you. Like, I like Scandinavian design, but it took me a while to figure out why I liked it. Pulpit hanging of a creche with some interesting abstract things. And words and symbols. I'm a word person, as a matter of fact. People say, oh, you're an artist, can you draw this? I'll say, well, if I have to. But I always write. If I have an idea, I write about it first. And then I draw or collage or photograph or do whatever I have to do to get the image there. But I'm a word person, and this technique allows you to use words with meanings. So one of the things that, the one thing I'm going to bring up in here, because if you've been in the church, you've probably all dealt with this. Someone gives the church a piece of liturgical something, and then you have to figure out where to put it and how to use it. And hanging it, I love sitting in churches and looking how things are hung. You can see what I do when I'm supposed to be sitting there listening. I'm looking at all the stuff up front. And anytime you have cloth that's not on the body, you have to figure out how can I hang it and put it on. You know, I've seen altars that have duct tape Velcro on the top, and then they put Velcro on the weaving and it sticks down, which, you know, that all works. The other thing that's a big deal is I see churches, because someone's given cloth and then no one knows how to take care of it. I see cloth that is really poorly taken care of, and maybe it's dirty and, you know, it sits there all winter and things start to chew it. So again, I always encourage people to be stewards by, if they don't know how to take care of this cloth that's now in their church, for that artist or the person who gave it, someone who knows, write it all down and tape it up to the inside of the closet or the place it's going to be stored. Because that's really quite sad when beautiful things are wrecked because they're not cared for. We're going to take rid of that because that's for weavers. So I think Judaic textiles are fascinating. I have several friends who are Judaic weavers. And this is a woman I have not met, but it's a beautiful talit. And she calls it the robe of light. She's used silks. Everything is silk. And the characters you see are Hebrew letters. And that's where there's no yarn, but she outlined them. And this would be for someone who's leading in a synagogue. It could have also been used for a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah. The tallit. People who are coming back to their Judaism are having bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs. It's like there's a renewal in the Judaic tradition, in the people's faith. And what's really lovely is to see all the beautiful tallits being woven for women, because they're very feminine. They have lots of symbols. This is a weaver, a friend of mine in California, Harriet, and she does lots of tallits commissions. This fine scene of a place, perhaps in Jerusalem, she actually painted on the dye, on the woven cloth. She also weaves with very bright colors, and she machine embroiders symbols that are important to the person. So this would be a tallit that someone requested with machine embroidered symbols on it. You can see is that a Star of David? What do you call that star? That's Star of David, right? And in very orthodox Judaic traditions, this would be worn by the Ohan. What's his name? By the
Rabbi.
Thank you. Here's a woman's tallit, and she used metallic gold flashy yarn. And Steve wove this for his daughter. Now, Phyllis travels to the Holy Lands a lot, and she's also a quilter. So she takes many, many photographs. And these are Torah mantles. And the Torah scrolls can be, I think these are about 24 inches tall, these pieces. and these cover them up until they're ready to be read. And these are beautiful because they're round. They're actually like sculptures. And she's both woven and done quilting together. So she's done quite a beautiful sculptural covering. This is one that Ina Golub did, and this is with tapestry. So when we traditionally think of fibers in churches, especially maybe, I don't know why I say this, probably Catholic churches over in Europe or something, you think of these heavy tapestries. And this is a tapestry technique, which is not the kind of thing I do, but it's a beautiful structure. For weddings, for people who get married, united in the Judaic tradition, you have this large canopy. And this was done by Harriet for her one of her sons. Most of it's quilted. A mezuzah would be on the door or any doorway in your house. If you are a person practicing the, if you want to have these, they're like a they're a place where you can keep a special scripture, and they're like a protectorate for the house. And Phyllis collects mezuzahs, but she made this one out of beads. Whoops, and I skipped through that. So, this last part, I've talked and talked and talked and talked. The tapestries are going to tell you themselves what they're about. So I'm going to play, when you view these, I'm going to play a song called Spirit of God. It was written by Sister Miriam Teresa Minter. And that might not mean anything, but if you remember to the 60s, when there was this folk revival of Christian song, she wrote, I saw raindrops on my window, love is like a rain. So this is a beautiful piece of verse. This is my group singing Strong to Gold. So we'll view these as we listen. Yes?
The difference between a tapestry and a wreath.
Oh, yes. Tapestry. When I say tapestries right now, it's like if I say Kleenex is to tissue. Okay? I'm meaning, when I say Kleenex, I mean a tissue to blow my nose with. And when I say tapestry this way, I'm meaning a wall hanging. Before I just said something, I said the tapestry technique, the tapestry structure. And when I said use the word that way, it's a specific structure, which basically means weavings which take hours and hours and hours to weave, usually on upright looms. They're not usually woven on a floor loom or a table loom like downstairs. So in this context, I'm saying tapestries, meaning wall hangings. Yeah, other questions up to this point? I forgot. I'm not being very good about this, asking questions today. Anything about the altar frontals or the pulpit hangings or the stoles or anything I've said that I didn't elaborate on? Okay. Let me get this music going.
Thank you.
here. Like I said, this is the part of the program I'm wanting to add a lot more things to. But I'm always looking, since we live in such a secular society, I'm always looking for ways that people's spirituality come through in their everyday lives, in their politics, in their homes. And there's a fabulous website where tapestry artists have done memorial tapestries regarding 9/11. It is www.tapestryart.org/memorial. And you go to this website and you can click on any of these pieces and it takes it to full size. And I think this is the kind of ways, the kinds of ways that we find people expressing their passion, their compassion, their hopes, their sorrow in our society at large today that also is just as important as the things that are reflected in our spiritual organizations, our houses of worship, and our gatherings of people together. One of the things I do is I collect music about weaving and spinning and farming, especially about the earth, because I'm a gardener and I'm from a farm. And this is from a Native American tradition, this chant. The earth, the air, the fire, the water, return, 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 return. The earth, the air, the fire, the water, return, 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 return. Ay, 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 oh, ay, oh, ay, oh, ay, oh. Ay, 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 oh, ay, oh, ay, oh, ay, oh. So in this piece, I tried to put all of the elements, the earth, the flame, the water, and then if you can see on the left is the profile of Mother Earth there. Her face is in the weaving. And I actually have a couple things to show you once I turn this off, but I want to, when I come to Holden, I never expect to be comfortable, internally or externally. I hope I get challenged when I come to Holden. If I'm not being challenged, then I'm not being open or I'm not putting myself in the place to be challenged. So I encourage you all to start looking at the art in your places of worship and to challenge the art that's there. If you think you know of people with whose skills and passions could create liturgical work that would help people enrich their worship experience. And I certainly don't want you to think, because this is a lecture, this is one of my talk lectures, that I know everything. Because I'm still learning. If there's a liturgical artist that you know of that you would like to connect me with, that would be great. Because eventually I want to add sculpture and metal and glass and all kinds of things like that. So hopefully, though, I've gotten you at least to open your eyes and maybe get excited about the fact that, wow, there is something more to this fabric that's sitting in the front of my sanctuary or on my pastor's body than I was thinking about before. So thank you for listening. I'll turn on the lights and I'll just end with a couple things that I brought you to show. Come on, end. Lights. So, more and more I think people who work with the land and the dirt, because our environment is being so greedily and eagerly used up these days. I think of them as more as stewards of the land. I think of them as stewards of the spirit. And I garden every square inch of my town lot. I have a corner lot, and every square inch of my house is garden. So one of the things I grow is wheat, because you don't have to mow it. And my group, Straw into Gold, we have a woven backdrop that hangs behind us when we sing. And there's two of these, and then our name, Straw into Gold. So I call this a piece of ritual cloth because it could be used in a Christian tradition for communion. It could be, I use it at Thanksgiving, of course. To me, just as a real rootedness and reminder of stewards of the soil and the people who grow, and I call them stewards of the spirit.
So this is
it's very cool.
This is wheat from my yard that I grow in my town. And it's woven with this technique. This one gets traveled a lot, so it's breaking up in part, but
you
see,
hang it.
I hang it, right. The wheat isn't on the back. The wheat is just on the front. So this would be my own ritual spiritual cloth I keep in my house. And the last thing I wanted to say was, let's see, a couple things, is that I take commissions. So you folks, if you're connected to churches who need new, or a pastor who's getting ordained, or anything like that, coming to my program, you can take one of my cards. And you don't have to do anything with it, but put it up in the wall and remember that you learned something about weaving. But please know that I'm available to design and weave, and I'm really good working with political organizations.
Churches are political.
Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of living, ours is no care of and of despair. Come, yet again, come. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'll put these right here if you would like one of my cards. The CDs are in the bookstore. So four more where that came from, four different ones. Thank you.
That's beautiful.
Thank you very much.